'Tis the season for close contact with people coughing and sneezing their way through the holidays. Now's the time to make sure your immune system is as strong as it can be. You've heard me talk about how I've used Empower to supercharge my immune system. Now my friends at The Harmony Company have introduced the ultimate in holiday season protection, Empower Plus. This improved formula combines AHCC, one of the most powerful mushroom extracts, with fermented wheat germ extract, super concentrate, enhancing your immune system like never before. With more than 150 combined published research reports, Empower Plus will quickly give your immune system the super boost you need. Protect your good health with Empower Plus. For more information and to order, go to theharmonycompany.com. That's theharmonycompany.com or call 800-422-5518. 800-422-5518. Use coupon code HOFFMAN10 at checkout and get a 10% discount and free shipping. That's theharmonycompany.com for the new Empower Plus. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Very much looking forward to today's podcast because something that's been on my radar screen for some time now is Urolithin A. It is the secret sauce in a product called MitoPure, which I've embraced. I use it as part of my daily regimen. And today we have an opportunity to do a deep dive on the science that underlies the use of Urolithin A for well-being and longevity. It's a very, very interesting substance. We're going to talk to someone who's been in on some of the initial research. Dr. Anurag Singh comes to us from Lausanne, Switzerland, which I believe is the headquarters of Amazensis, which is a company that does innovative nutraceuticals. He's the chief medical officer of Timeline Nutrition. It's a biotech company focused on discovering and developing next generation natural compounds that target improvement in mitochondrial health. His career began in 2003 as a resident medical doctor in Lucknow, which I believe is in India. In 2009, he'd become a medical doctor at Nestle. And Nestle is a company that's done a lot of nutraceutical research. They are looking for IP as a food company, also branching out into nutraceuticals. He provided medical and scientific expertise in developing clinical trial protocols and led numerous food and respiratory allergy clinical trials. And then in 2012, he was a Kaufman Fellow finalist. In 2013, he became global medical director at Nestle Health Science. Big job. In 2014, he joined Amazensis as chief medical officer, where they developed a novel science-first brand and led overall medical and clinical research strategies. His work led to multiple high-impact clinical trial publications, which we'll talk a little bit about on today's podcast, partnership deals, and the launch of healthcare consumer products, namely, one among them, MitoPure, which is Urolithin A. So, Dr. Singh, it's really a pleasure having you on the program. I very much look forward to picking your brains and learning more about this thing, which I'm all in on. I take it personally and recommend it to my patients and listeners. First of all, you know, as background to this, can you share with us a quick summary of a landmark study on the drivers of good health and longevity? It's called the Hallmarks of Aging Study. And I believe there are 9 hallmarks of aging, or does that date me that maybe there another couple have been added?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me, Dr. Hoffman.
It's a great pleasure.
Yeah. So back in, let's say, in 2013, you're correct. There was this first seminal sort of landmark study called the Hallmarks of Biological Aging. Now, these refer to 9 biological pathways that kind of dampen down with aging and get disrupted with aging. And these link to how you sense nutrients from your diet. So this is called this deregulated nutrient sensing, how the proteins in the body get deregulated. So, you know, a lot of times you get these protein deposits accumulating in key organs. So typical, you know, condition with aging is Alzheimer's disease. You get all these amyloid deposits. Then you get something called as, you know, gut microbiome dysregulation. You get chronic inflammation. So sort of with aging, the body kind of gets inflamed. You have things like called telomeres that dictate how your genetic knowledge is, you know, stored, and these get altered. But the hallmark, the key hallmark that links all of these together is something that is the core of what we do, and we'll talk about, is something called mitochondrial deregulation or dysfunction. So mitochondria being these sort of cellular factories in our cells and bodies that kind of give us energy to move around and, you know, think clearly, et cetera, et cetera. So this was, since then there have been a few more added. So one is called autophagy or macrophagy. This is really sort of how with aging our cells get filled with debris and can't clear out the waste. And so that's one of them. And yeah, so a lot of folks have, a lot of companies in the area, a lot of efforts in academics are focused on one of these different biological hallmarks of aging and how you can intervene and fix these problems.
And I think that, so the point being is, you know, there's a couple of ways to extend life. One is to cure diseases, to come up with a cure for cancer and to prevent heart disease with, you know, better and better cardiovascular preventive drugs and so on and so on. But I believe it's been stated that the gains, even if we were to conquer these diseases, would be minimal in terms of lifespan, maybe extending lifespan by a few, by a single digit number of years, because there's an intrinsic mechanism that winds down. It's an aging clock that is present in all of us that inexorably pushes us towards progressive decline and death. And that's what these, a lot of this anti-aging research looks at, not so much to cure disease. Well, it's important. It'd be great to, you know, help us with all the maladies that shorten our lives.
Yeah. I mean, this is how, you know, there's sort of two schools of thought today in the longevity field. One is you can cure all these diseases, Alzheimer's, cancer, you know, or the cardiovascular, all the major chronic conditions, and live, you know, beyond 100, 120 years. That's the lifespan crowd, what I call. And then there is the sort of the functional medicine believers that, you know, aging starts very early in your late 30s and 40s and 50s, and then accelerates, you know, down the road in the 60s and 70s. What can we do proactively in our 30s, 40s, and 50s to prolong our health span? So the health span being our resilience, our functional resilience. So when you're 75, 80, you can go do your, you know, groceries, you can play with your grandkids, and you can be better functionally. So that's
and there's a distinction because, you know, perhaps there is some finite number of years that we can live. But I think what we're seeing is that while some advances are helping us live longer, actually it's generally acknowledged that there's a decline in health span. More and more of us are living into senior years, dependent on medication, surgery. We're limited in our faculties, and it's no fun. Quality of life declines.
I mean, you and I both are trained internal med doctors, and so what happens in the sort of, you know, the end stage of the spectrum, when you get, for example, if you get sarcopenia, let's talk about something which is muscle wasting. Now that leads to frailty, and a frail older adult. We all have this mental image. I know it's the 80-year-old walking around in a wheelchair or with the cane. And it's really the muscle has declined, the cognitive ability has declined, the immune status has declined. Now, is this something you could have stopped in your 40s and 50s? Perhaps, yes, right? With the right approach, diet and exercise, you could have. And then you get in this circle of polymedication to tackle all these chronic ailments, things like statins, and statins have impacts on mitochondrial health in a not so nice way. So it's kind of a, you know, so I still think that we need to think proactively. I see longevity as a marathon that you need to start thinking in your 40s and 50s rather than just wait for when, you know, you get the functional limitations in your 60s, 70s, 80s.
Since we're on a Zoom call and we have not just audio, but we also have video, Although we don't share that with our listeners, but I noticed that you're wearing an I Love Mitochondria sweatshirt. And so could you give us a little bit of a primer on what are mitochondria? What are their functions? How do mitochondria go awry? And what are we trying to correct?
Sure. So mitochondria, think of mitochondria as the battery on your cell phone. I think that's the closest analogy I can give. You know, if it's fully charged, the green, when you charge your phone, if it's all green, then you have a lot of energy. You can go about using your cell phone forever. And that's kind of what mitochondria are. They are these tiny cellular organelles that are like the batteries of our bodies. And in organs that have a very high metabolic demand, such as muscle, skeletal muscle, you need to use the muscle to walk, to move, to get up from a chair. These muscle cells have thousands of mitochondria, almost like an energy grid. Neurons have a similar. They have many thousands of mitochondria all in a architecture. Now, all these organelles are doing is being this power grid, producing energy to fuel the body. And what happens is that if you don't charge it, if you don't clean out the waste in these mitochondria, what you get is, you know, again, back to the analogy of the phone, you get a red light going up. So you're running out of battery, you're running out of fuel. And that's what really happens with aging, right? You're low on energy, you're low on fuel, and you don't have enough energy to go about doing your daily activities. So these are the organs I've studied them. I've taken small chunks of biopsies from a 75-year-old who's been running marathons all their life versus a 75-year-old and walking around with a cane, you know, with their muscle compromised. And if you look inside with an electron microscope, it's very clear. It's the mitochondria. The mitochondria are just very healthy in this older adult who's exercising versus the 75-year-old who's kind of very sedentary, walking, not moving around. So these are, think of them as the power grid, as the batteries of our bodies.
So I believe you're actually one of the originators of the urolithin A hypothesis. So take us back to how you came upon this substance and linked it to mitochondrial function. I mean, it seems like it has to do with some property, some beneficial polyphenol that can be found in foods like pomegranates.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, pomegranates have been reputed to be, you know, wonderful anti-aging panacea. You know, pomegranate juice was pitched as a curative. Then the FTC intervened with a big lawsuit and said, no, you can't make these claims about pomegranate. But there is something within pomegranates that can be unleashed, but it's a little tricky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. So, well, pomegranates in many cultures are seen as the superfood, right? So they have all these health benefits linked to cognition, you know, cardiovascular, metabolic health outcomes. So when we started out, and this is really 15 years back, we started with the simple idea is that in our diets, in our natural products out there, there are a lot of bioactive molecules that have immense health benefits. And what we wanted to do was really bring the biotech approach of deconstructing a lot of these health promoting dietary components.
So you're a discovery company, but as you
we were really a biotech and different from, let's say, the pharmaceuticals that we said we want to intervene early because we were, and I've been studying aging for 20 years and really looking, we knew that this whole hallmarks of aging that we were talking about, they start going down this whole idea of biological age. And you mentioned aging clocks. They start getting changed in our 40s and 50s. And so this idea, we wanted to look at, so we started with a library of thousands of bioactive compounds. Mm-hmm. And we very quickly, from those thousands of natural compounds, narrowed it down to a few polyphenols. So you were mentioning about polyphenols. These are kind of like antioxidants that are present in fruits and nuts and kind of the main constituents of what people say are the health benefits from things like Mediterranean diet, right? So people living in Italy, Spain, France, they eat all these fruits and nuts. And so what became clear to us as we studied this, we actually went around 10 different countries and source pomegranates, as you started to talk about it. We started looking at the different compounds inside pomegranate, and there are thousands of them. And most aging or longevity research starts in worms, you know. So you take these hundreds of compounds, mm-hmm. you throw it on these worms, and you say, okay, what is that one magic compound that is going to make them more mobile and live longer? And, you know, we thought it was, so in the pomegranate are these polyphenols called L-G-tannins, okay? Mm-hmm. And they are present in a lot of nuts as well. So walnuts and pecans have them as well. Dark berries, raspberry has them. So we started giving L-G-tannins because there was so much literature, as you said, on pomegranates. And there was no effect on the worm models. These are the classical aging models. And then we were collaborating with really one of the top mitochondrial researchers. And in literature, there was a waste product known of this pomegranate metabolism called urolithins. And we gave him a bunch of urolithins. And he came running, this professor across the university here in Switzerland that we are based out of, saying, man, this one compound that you didn't, because he was blinded, this professor, and he said this one compound is extending lifespan by about 45%. And
so when you say blinded, not literally, I mean, it's in a double-blind placebo-controlled trial. In other words, avoid bias.
So you take thousands of or hundreds in this case because you narrow it down and you label them AX, whatever, A to Z, and give them numbers, and you give them to a top laboratory, and they just basically put these compounds in different concentrations and put them in the growing, let's say, media or culture of these worms.
This is sometimes called a high throughput analysis. Am I correct?
This really is a
way to scale this kind of research, because you don't want to just, you know, laboriously go one thing at a time. You want to just screen a whole bunch. That's the way they develop drugs. You know, these are synthetic chemicals. So you're borrowing the model from the pharmaceutical pipeline to screen these natural products. You know that there may be something out there, but you don't know, because there's literally hundreds or thousands of constituents even in a single plant. And what's the secret sauce that makes that plant so beneficial?
Yeah, perfect explanation. That's what took us about 5 years, just to put it in context. This was 5 years. It was high throughput. We narrowed it down on this one. So let's talk about postbiotics. So what happens after we eat these fruits and nuts and these polyphenols, which were originally thought to be beneficial, what happens is that our gut microbiome, which are these bacteria that coexist inside our gut, they digest these complex, you know, dietary components, and then they break them down into smaller molecules. This is what is called postbiotics. Now, one of them was always thought as a waste product of this metabolism and ignored. So we did not discover, let's say, urolithin A. What we did discover was the benefits of this molecule. And and once we found the data in these worms, as where all longevity research starts, we then went to older rodent models. These were all, let's say, equivalent to 80-year-old rodents that were then fed in their diet this molecule, urolithin A. And lo and behold, we started seeing these remarkable impacts on muscle and mobility. We saw almost like a 10% improvement in muscle strength, about a 40% improvement in endurance. And then 10 years, we have done now the translation into humans with multiple randomized trials on this molecule.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, with animals, and, you know, especially short-lived animals, you can actually speak to the issue of longevity. With humans, it's work in progress, because you'd have to have literally generations of scientists presiding over those kinds of studies. So, so this became a promising compound. So, great. So we should all like guzzle pomegranate juice, right? Or does that work?
No. So the trick is you need to be eating these fruits and nuts. So you need to be eating the right diet. So that's the first thing you need. And we have gone into countries where there's a lot of high intake of, for example, pomegranates and walnuts. And we have gone into countries where people don't have a culture of eating a lot of pomegranates. But then the second pillar that is important in this whole chemistry is what I just mentioned, is the gut microbiome. Okay. So these coexisting healthy bacteria it's really about 99% of the genetic material that is inside us is these healthy bacteria that live in a symbiotic relationship. Now, what happens is this goes missing in about 2/3 of the healthy adult population around the world. And why does it go missing? It's, well, a lot of us are not eating the right fibers. A lot of us are not eating fermented foods. A lot of us are taking antibiotics and eating processed foods. So we have, well, I have looked at populations from France, Italy to Canada, US, and now even from my home country where I come from, India, and the natural production of urolithin A, this molecule, is very variable. So the highest we see is about 30% to 40% in countries where Mediterranean diet is very common. In the US, just to give you an idea, in Canada, it's about 10%. And even that 10% is very variable. So most people would have very low levels of the molecule that would not give you a health benefit. And in Asian country, like my home country, India, it's about 5%. Now, this is the variability. The gut microbiome is the variability. So not everybody is exposed to this molecule, and you need to supplement, and that's why we created the supplementation route for this molecule.
So this is a workaround. In other words, you actually, in your patented process, you create urolithin A that's body ready, that can overcome the obstacles to biotransformation of the oligotannins in fruits and nuts, for example. So without divulging your secret, highly guarded process that took a lot of time to develop, I'm sure. How do you do it? What do? You take a raw material and you refine it, or do you create a fermentable concoction, or how do you do it?
So there are different ways. One is you do a chemical reaction and you create the molecule from raw materials to that is 99.99% identical to the molecule that exists in nature. And we've had to do that. We have had to show that the molecule urolithin A that we produced from chemistry is identical when you do something called as mass spectrometry, and we had to give pomegranate juice to somebody who was a very high converter of the biotransformation naturally, and we had to take the urine from this particular individual, isolate the urolithin A, and show that it's 100%, almost 100% identical. So we had to do that. There is, of course, the way through fermentation technology to also produce it. The problem is nobody really knows what is the right gut bacteria. Okay. We have gone in and sequenced what I call the blessed people, so those who eat the right diet and have the right gut microbiome, and there's not a lot of them. But there are a few individuals who make a very high level, and we have sequenced their gut microbiome. It's never clear if it's one bug or a community or an ecosystem. And we see things like Akkermansia being high in the gut of these people, but we don't know if it's you know, just a sign that the gut is more diverse that is then producing this molecule. So I think it will be a very tough way to kind of make it from the fermentation route, but we are working on that as well.
So what caught my eye about urolithin A, my origin story around MitoPure, is a study that appeared in Nature, and Nature is a very high impact journal. I mean, I see a lot of stuff and it's from whatever, you know, the Iranian Journal of, ethno pharmacognosy or something. And I don't know, you know, maybe on a small study of, you know, 11 individuals, out of Tehran, you know, I'm not sure that really cuts it for me in terms of plausibility. But this study really stood out for me because it actually was, it was applied to, you'll correct me on the details, to middle-aged or older individuals who were, you know, maybe having some issues with endurance. I believe some of them had metabolic syndrome, and they were found, administration of urolithin A was found to increase their walking distance in a given a set time. There's a set, you know, amount of time, like how much distance can you cover? Am I hitting the mark on that?
Yeah, so this is one of the several randomized placebo-controlled trials we ran. The first trial we ran was we took a bunch of very sedentary, almost pre-frail, I call them, you know, people who don't move around very well, They have declining muscle function, and we gave them different increasing doses of urolithinate mitopure in a pill. And we saw that up, you know, as we increased the dosing, we saw more and more exposure in the blood. We even took little biopsies of these individuals. And after a month, we started seeing that the mitochondria that were dysfunctional were now starting to turn around and look very healthy. So how does this first, let's also talk about how does that happen? How do you take a bad mitochondria and make it make it good? And so this is really the key piece of how this molecule urolithinate works, is that with age, you get a lot of stress mitochondria, what we call even zombie mitochondria. And the body has a natural system in place to clean these zombie looking bad mitochondria out. But this natural process declines with aging. And so you collect, now your cells are full of bad mitochondria and not the healthy ones. And so what this molecule does is it just targets these damaged mitochondria that have this signal called eat me signal to destroy them, and it tags them for destruction. So now these bad mitochondria get destroyed, become building blocks of new healthy mitochondria. And that's how we, after a month, when we take these biopsies in older, pre-frail individuals, we started seeing that the doses, and we found the right doses also. So we found that about 500 milligram to a gram of urolithinate was the sweet spot of this molecule for human consumption and seeing the efficacy.
And by the way, that process, you know, it's great that you've broken it down in lay terms, but in scientific terms, the buzzword is mitophagy. For those of you out there who are linguists, you know that I think it's from the Greek, phage means to eat, like a phagocyte, is a white blood cell that gobbles up intruders, and a sarcophagus, it gobbles up the body. It's a coffin that sort of eats the body. So mitophagy means literally eating up the mitochondria, but it's kind of a cleanup crew to get those mitochondria out of the way so that efficient energy production can occur.
Absolutely. It's like, with aging, the garbage truck stops showing to your door, right?
Yep.
And that's what this molecule does, is basically it ensures that this garbage truck shows up and cleans out the waste. I call it even the Pac-Man molecule, because it just gobbles up like a Pac-Man game all the sort of the zombie mitochondria. So from that first randomized trial, back to your original question, we then did three more randomized clinical trials. One obviously in older adults, because that's where we found the first effects. And this time we went longer, up till 4 months. And we looked at both the hand and the leg muscles after 4 months of intervention. This is something we published actually in JAMA, which is also a very highly regarded journal. And what we saw was that the older folks, these were healthy older folks, and they had more energy to, let's say, do a leg press in the equivalent to the gym. In the gym, they just went 20% longer on the exercise test. And it was not just in the leg muscle, it was also on the muscle that actually declines the first, which is a muscle between your thumb and your index fingers, called the first dorsal introsei muscle. And that's the muscle that is important for grip strength. So when you do a firm handshake, it's actually remarkable that how many studies are now coming that show that a firm handshake or a grip strength is very closely linked to mortality.
It really should be part of every physical exam. There are devices that can measure your grip strength, and I think that would be an essential part of a physical assessment. Not necessarily, how fast can you run a mile or something, but a practical assessment that can be done at the bedside in the doctor's office, kind of thing.
Yeah. And then we did this other trial, which you were talking about, where we took folks who were metabolically unhealthy, overweight. They were not old. They were in their 50s and early 60s and late 40s. And we gave them 4 months of supplementation with both 500 milligram and a gram of urolithinate. The standout, let's say, readout, we saw a clear effect was muscle strength. When you do, again, sort of a leg press kind of a test, we found about a 10 to 12% more improved functionality, so better muscle strength in these individuals without changing anything they were taking in their diet, without any change in physical activity, which was very encouraging. And then what we saw was in the higher dose group, so the grand group, the individuals tended to walk better. So they walked about 33 meters further in something that clinicians use very routinely.
That's about 100 feet. Yeah,
so they saw about, you know, in this test, it's called the 6-minute walk. So they calculate the distance you walk in 6 minutes. But I'm a trained immunologist, but their standout feature in all these trials actually has been that the whole body inflammation is also dampened. So there is actually a very close nexus between mitochondrial health and your inflammation status. And this is an emerging field. But these, to summarize, these were the main three randomized trials we did.
Okay. You beautifully laid down the groundwork for our discussion in part two. I want to talk about some practical applications of this. Our subject today is a unique compound. It's urolithin A. And it is something that I think has great promise. It's available from a company called Timeline. And I want to get the information in front of me here. Which is our call to action, which is you can go to mitopure.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, if people want to learn more on the science, they go to mitopure.com. They can also go to timeline.com, which is the company that markets Mitopure, and they can... Yeah, they can learn more about the products. They can learn more about the different modes of intake of the product.
Great. Well, we got lots more to discuss in part two. So, Dr. Singh, stay with us. I know you're in a different time zone over there. The kids are already put to bed. You're in a beautiful part of the world, Lausanne, Switzerland, which, by the way, is a biotech mecca, right? I think it's no coincidence that you're situated in Switzerland. A lot of the great companies, including my namesake, Hoffmann La Roche, I think is a Swiss company. So there you have it. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back on the subject of urolithin A.